Well, I think, you know, all of us more or less, you know, instinctively avoid pain. And so then there's so many, you know, and then there's, then that's relative in that, certain pain people, some people avoid more than others. Everybody, no one likes pain. Everyone tries to avoid it. Some avoid it more than others. And, some people's avoidance has gotten to such a place that there becomes psycho, it brings psychopathology. So, really no way to work with, just, you know, it's just not possible. You see, it's a funny thing. You know, we're down here on the ground and it seems like everybody is connected here and we're all one group of soul, and we are one group of souls down here on the ground all living our life. Doing our thing, doing our best. And it seems like there's therefore accessibility to people, you know, or camaraderie or some kind of planetary community, you know. I'm a person, you're a person. Hello, hi, how are you? How are you doing? What's up? What are you, how's your day? How are you feeling? But it's not like that because people walk around in their shell, in a shell, protected. You know, Ross said anonymity, distraction, and sleep. So, you know, that these are primary qualities of Earth human society. Anonymity, distraction, sleep. So at the emotional level, interactive, there's anonymity. At the mental level, there's a lot of distraction. At the spiritual level, there's sleep. I mean, I think, you know, we just have the wrong, we just don't see things clearly. It's like, if I'm trying to talk to my air conditioner remote, I'm crazy. Really? So, you know, what's wrong with me? Why am I talking to the remote control? It doesn't answer. It's just, you know, it's silent. It doesn't talk. Same thing with those in their states of mind. In their states of mind, many are doggedly avoidant. Doggedly avoidant. So, yeah. Yeah, well, Ross talked about the vast sinkhole of indifference. Remember that line? The vast sinkhole of indifference. And that's, you know, you just, we, you know, you see, we're all a little naive. You know? In some, you know, the thing about love, wisdom, balance, you know, the balance integration of fourth ray, fifth ray, is that it's not a one-shot deal. And it's not one, one size fits all. Meaning? It's a continual rebalancing. And in different situations or we can say with different forms of catalyst, different imbalances arise, or the manifest different, you know, there's manifestation of different degrees of love, wisdom, imbalance. So there's certain, you know, it's like, you know, we see something bad happening to a person who seems innocent, and our heart can break. That's actually love over wisdom. Because we don't see that the person who's innocent now being abused probably did worse to someone before. Because we don't see past in time. We're locked in space, right? We're locked in time, you know? That's space-time. So, we don't see that the deficiency of wisdom, therefore we approach with love over wisdom. Meanwhile, and the same kind of thing with, you know, people who are avoidant. We approach excessive love over wisdom. Meaning, we don't acknowledge the futility until we've hit our heads against the wall many times. You really don't want to listen. I mean, you know, people come to us, preformed. So, you know, I do a lot of chat with a lot of people, and that's gone on for years. And you know, I can say something, but that's the end of my work. You know, it's out of my hands after I, you know, close my mouth, after the statements are made. It's in their, the ball is in their court. So I think we need to up our wisdom in understanding people. And I felt for many years in general, globally, wanderers both underestimate and overestimate people. We underestimate their capacity, their specific understanding or ability. There are a lot of people who seem like dolts, D-O-L-T-S, a 3D dolt. They seem like a dolt, meaning like a lumpen proletariat, or, you know, just a dull-minded person. But then sometimes a flash comes out and you see, I see, wow, that person knows something. Or, wow, that person's really virtuous in some way, more than me, perhaps. Then, meanwhile, also we overestimate and imagine that people can follow us. Well, they usually can't. You know, intelligent dialogue is a relic. Intelligent conversation is rare, increasingly rare in the age of TV and chat. You know, the fact that we want to help is love. And the purity of the desire to help shows the purity of love, relative purity. Meaning, clearance, and it's so perfect, you know, in that lower chakra blockages limit higher chakra service. Lower chakra blockages limit higher chakra service. So, to the extent that service is in the service of low self-esteem, bolstering my sense of myself, because, well, I really don't think I did enough in my life, well, I have a lot of benefit, I feel I don't deserve it, well, I feel, I have to sacrifice myself regularly, only that's true service. Or, I really like when they're listening to me, I really like when they follow me, I really like that they call me sir, I really like that they look up to me. To the extent that that's involved in service to other, it's impure, you know, it's mixed with the lower chakra blockage. And to that extent, our spoken words of service are partially in the service of making ourselves feel good about ourselves, making us feel good about us, helping me feel good about me because I don't really feel good about me because of, you know, dot, 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 my history, my failures, my inability, whatever I'm focused on that, you know, I consider my weakness, failure, my indication of my low value. So, to the, you know, the only one who serves purely has no self, you know? That's why it's only higher self who's beyond duality of self and other, or realizes, you know, all is one, that pure service occurs, you know? And we don't understand that, not at all. We really don't understand it because we're so deeply self-involved in all we do. Self-involved. So in Buddhism, it's called self-cherishing. You know? So anyway, the work of love, wisdom, balancing goes on and on. And different situations different situations act as catalysts to manifest the different forms of our own imbalance. Sometimes love over wisdom, sometimes wisdom over love. It's very subtle, you know? It's very straight, you know. This is like brown rice and lean meat and green leafy vegetables. It's boring. You know, it's boring sometimes, but it's probably the best you can do. Anyway, but I think some fat on the meat is good too, by the way. So just wanted to say that. And talks about how the amino acids or vitamins or minerals or whatever that apparent, you know, that are generally missing in a strict vegan diet also create biochemical deficiencies in body and brain that leads to certain kind of rigid, intolerant, and distortion leads to certain kind of distortions in the mind related to deficiencies of the pure vegetarian diet. And that's why you see so many angry vegetarians or dogmatic vegetarians. It's totalitarianism by another name. It's like, you know, green fascism.
Well, I mean,
you can never, I mean, to say a person is an angry person, right? To define one as, quote, an angry person means that they walk around with a chip on their shoulder and they're angry regularly. Well, you know, I think we have to assume, we should just, let's be humble and assume we all have unresolved anger, unresolved sorrow, unresolved fear, panic, terror, all of it. You know, we can all be dogmatic, we can all be deeply selfish, we could all be very mean if, you know, again, if the right catalyst arises that activates or touches upon that distortion. It's an interesting thing. I mean, real humility is magnanimity, or true humility is greatness. You know, those who are really great are really humble, and that humility is part of their greatness because they realize how far yet there's to go, and that, you know, there's still a lot of non-development within. But you know, if you're looking for healthy people, don't go into the spiritual ashrams. It's a community, you know, it's a psychiatric community.
Right. And so what you'll find there is some people who are really messed up, and then other people who are, you know, everybody who would go there needs help.
Of course, I lived in monasteries, I studied psychology. And people go to groups and self-help things. You know, needing help or having distortions is normal. The question is then what? And what happens for a lot of people is that they use the teachings or their membership even in that community to hold on to certain distortions. And that's where the angry yogi or angry yoga student, you know, is the one who basically took their own woundedness and then clothed it with a false, you know, sanctity, the pseudo sanctity that they believe that comes from simply being there and doing yoga. Think that there's some sanctity to people who do yoga? Not at all. The people who did yoga really well in past lives and meditation, they're not involved in the scene today. They're just living relatively developed lives now, matured lives. They're not necessarily, you know, it's not like the soul is a monastic life after life. Some, but very few. The people, I always say that, you know, if you weren't a monastic 500 years ago, you missed the boat. So, the people involved in Buddhism today, I mean, you know, are they're getting a very poor version of the original teacher and teaching. Anyway, and so one thing that compensates for long-term love over wisdom is very intensive wisdom over love. One distortion, one polarized distortion or one imbalance. An imbalance on one side leads to an imbalance on the other. So when I force myself to give and give and give, or I give more than I really should based on what I need in a holistic way, the resentment is generated, which then leads to wisdom over love. The giving more than you should is called love over wisdom. It's, you know, enthusiasm and innocence, in immaturity in a way, or naive. And we all do it sometimes, for sure. That, I would say, is love over wisdom. And it gives rise then to some kind of bitter taste, which is the resentment, which is related to recognition that it's too much. They don't appreciate it. They're not using it. They don't value it as much as they should. And it's just, you know, seeds on rocky ground. You know, you're pissing in the wind. Not pissing, but you're singing, you know, you're giving some, but it's the same. Pearls before swine, seeds on rocky ground. It's, you know, what love's labor lost. Love's labor lost. So that's love over wisdom. And then, you know, it compensates by periods of wisdom over love, which is, you know, rejection of the whole situation. And pullback. I mean, I'm always shocked when people think that, like, oh, I finished that long ago. Oh, yeah, now I feel really clear. In, like, good morning. The mind is not that simple. People wish it was. You know, people, we regularly frame our understanding based on what we want, not based on what is. So our view of much is based on or conforming to or derived from the desire to keep our comfort zone. I see what I want to see. Or I believe it as I wish to believe it, not as I seek it as truth. I seek the truth. You know, it's like whatever it is, I want to know it. Hit me. Whatever it is, just tell me. But you know, most people can't do that. Most people are so demoralized. It really is, you know, related to that Illuminati long-term thing. The dumbing down, the dulling of critical intellect, you know? The devaluation of thought, you know? Of reason, of analysis, of all those, you know, square nerdy type qualities. That ultimately leads people to be more confused. Well, you see, you can't hope to be spotless in a dusty room. You know, the dusty room of the mind doesn't lend itself to purity and sterility and spotlessness of experience. So we have to assume that we're gonna bump on and off lots of distortions. So you're not going to move from long-term hopelessness or discouragement or kind of a contracted view of what's possible, hopelessness in a way, or loss of hope. You can't move from that to clear-seeing confidence in one step. There has to be, you know, you have to treat your mind like you'd treat a wounded child, a crying child. Your mind is like a crying child. Everybody, actually. Underneath all of our understanding is some sorrow and hurt. Or understand, you know, underneath our distorted patterns, including resentment, is hurt. You know, sadness and hurt. So that's why love is key. You know, love leads the way. And love deserves to be over wisdom somewhat. love should lead the wisdom way in healing. So it's about being really nice to yourself, you know? I mean, almost everybody is self-punishing, you know? I myself am not really self-punishing, you know? I have my excesses, but I enjoy them. So that's why I can do an excess and stop it, because, you know, there's some problem if you do any kind of excess. And then if you really enjoy it, you can come back, pick it up again, and stop it again. But one of the great achievements of meditation is the dissolving self-conflict. So you have to make peace with yourself, which means sit through your hell. Sit through your hatred, and sit through your grief, and sit through your panic. You know, the more fiercely we sit, meaning be with it, the faster it'll dissolve. But it doesn't happen in one step. And we go from, you know, more painful distortion to less painful distortion. We go from more unconscious distortion to less unconscious distortion, meaning a little bit more conscious, a little more understood. You know, we go from big problematic distortion to less problematic distortion. So, and that's the same as striking a bell, or when a note is struck. You know, there's just like that. You know, there's a progressive dimming of the signal, and that happens, takes time. So anyway, I think you need to find what works. You know, for me, I had breath practice, and it worked. I know that was the only thing that worked in my mind for making peace. So you have to find what works and use it deeply. That's why I don't read a lot of channeling, because it's the raw metaphysics and some other sources, Buddhism and so on, it works. It continues to produce understanding. It's the catalyst for generating further understanding, while others, for me, don't do that much. So I don't even spend time. I don't even read the whole page now. People send me some things, because I can see what the level is. Adida had that too earlier, meaning he could look at a book. I mean, this is not that level maybe, but he could look at a book and indicate what level the consciousness of the writer was. And that's very possible. So anyway, you see, in a non-narcissistic way, the way we treat others is an extension of how we treat ourselves. Not narcissistic means it's a fact. It's not what I like or don't like. It's just the way it is, that we treat others similarly to how we treat ourselves. And you know, we have a range of unrecognized emotions. I mean, it's just arrogance to assume I'm finished with anything. You know, you're not finished with anything. Everything is in process. Some things you know for sure, or you believe you know, and it's relatively, you know, true. Like, there really are secret forces that want to control Earth in the negative side. But I think we need to be really, really honest with ourselves. That's why I say, you know, if you focus on development of the fifth ray, or honesty and communication, it already includes love. Of course, you have to be careful what you say. But, you know, anger isn't a problem so long as you're not hurting others. So, you know, what you know, there's the inner and the outer. What you're thinking, what you're feeling, is your, you know, is you, or a part of you, but it doesn't, that's a protected zone. What you say and what you do is another matter. That crosses the, you know, so-called boundary and then affects others. Saying to them, doing with them. And that's where negativity is generated and real loss of polarity occurs. But in the in a broad mind or a heartful willingness to experience our rage, there's no negativity or negative polarization unless you pick it up and carry it and work, you know, bring it to others. So, I mean, for me, I in general, had a pretty good relation to my own anger for a long time. Meaning, you know, I can accept it. It's okay. You know, if you make a big deal out of it, it's very hard to let it go or to accept it. Making a big deal of it is a form of non-acceptance. Being upset about your mind is a form of non-acceptance. First of all, suppression is the basis of explosive anger. If you don't want explosive anger, make an escape valve for the experiencing of anger. The escape valve is the willingness to feel it in your body-mind. Whatever this rage is, okay, let me be with it. I've done meditation a couple of times where I had so much anger that with every out-breath, my mantra was hate. I would, on the out-breath, go, hate. Look, you know, you gotta get off that view. We want to get rid of it, sure. But if you sit there thinking, I want to get rid of it, I'm doing this to get rid of it, that's non-acceptance. That's not love. Love is, it's here, I'll be with it fully till it's not here. You know? It's not respectful. Love your hate. Absolutely. Love your stuckness. I told a client this many years ago. I said, love your stuckness. Celebrate your stuckness. You're stuck, man. You're really stuck. So, okay. I'm stuck. Love your hate. Love your grief. Love your panic. Love your weakness, and then you will find it will dissolve faster. But if you do everything trying to get rid of it, it will never go. I mean, don't be so upset about yourself. It isn't you. Or, don't be freaked out by your mind. It isn't you. Your conscious mind is not you. Body-mind-spirit complex is not you. You see, that's the value. That's the nature of the first penetration of Buddhist enlightenment. There are four levels. The first stream entry, Sotapanna. And you might want to read. Somebody might want to look at that sometime. Sota, I've said it many times. Sotapanna, one of the achievements of the first penetration, meaning contact with intelligent infinity, meaning bliss, all one, all love, all joy, all perfect. Not me only, not my suffering is so heavy, not the world is a fucked up place, but joy, one, light, ease, peace, resolution, harmony, a great beingness. One of the primary results is no longer believing in the notion of self. Knowing, although that the effects of distortion remain in mind, people still have negative patterns. There's still distortion in mind. However, the first cut has been made in the root of the belief in a separate self. And, I mean, I remember when I was 19, 18, in college, I remember it very clearly that night. Sitting in my dorm room, doing meditation by a small light at night. And it was an insight. It just came and bang! Ah! this self is just a thought. Now, I had years of grief after that, and years of suffering, and I still have distortions. But that was some level of penetration. And from that, you can take a detached view of your mind. It isn't you. The contents of mind is not the present, is not the true being. Your true being is distinct from the contents of mind. Your true being observes and makes use of the contents of mind. But it is not its identity, the identity of your being, your true nature, is not the thoughts and feelings and sensations that arise and pass away. That, and that's the key. So you know, love your hate. That's exactly the key. And that's where the real work comes in, is in the midst of distortion. Like I remember a year ago, and I remember I felt panic. And I remember very clearly, I simply, you know, it was very heavy, you know, lots of old fear came up, triggered by that, but it's deeper than just that. And so the panic, you see, is triggered by a threat that's actually far less than the degree of panic generated, because that panic is partly a holdover from previous fear unhealed. So I lay down on the bed, cross my legs. I often cross my legs when I lie down, like sitting Indian style, lying down on my back with the legs crossed, which is a very good position for lying meditation on back. And put my hands on my belly and my heart, and actually I felt joy in the panic. The joy was, it's great. This is my distortion coming up strongly, which gives me a chance to love and accept it right here in the heat of the moment. How wonderful. And I actually felt gratitude being the catalyst triggering the release, or at least experience, of deep panic and terror. And I could sit with it or lie with it. And comfort my you know, disrupted body energy system, and be with it. And it hasn't returned since. But I would never think, why has it come back again? If I feel it again, it's so naive to think, how can this come back again? I felt I finished this already. I mean, it's so incredibly naive. I can't believe it. Because, you see, it's not that people really know it's gone. They want it to be gone. And they think, okay, I did something with it before. It's gone, right? It's gone only because it's not gone, but you want it to be gone, so you imagine it's gone, which is wrong. Then it rearises because it isn't gone. It's just in the unconscious. I mean, so, you know, we are all chock full of distortions. Every chakra is blocked somewhat. I mean, let's be real. That's humility, but it's based on truth, you know? The higher form of humility is really based on wisdom, you know? If I think I'm a big shot, it's only because I'm looking down. I ain't looking up. If I look up, what do I see? I see all the array of the angels and the benevolent servers and the guardians and higher self and the council and confederation and on and on and on. Do I think I'm a big stuff now? No, I don't. But I'm not a worm. But I ain't a big shot. Because I can look up. But you know, if you ain't looking up, you ain't looking round. Meaning, look up, look down, look around, you know, see what is. So it's a lack of willingness to see some of what is when we feel arrogant. And so the pride that thinks that it's gone is based on weakness. And the acknowledgement that I have lots of distortions still is based on truth. And the result of it is greatness, actually. Because, okay, you know, I can sit with your wretchedness and I can sit with mine. But I would never think it's finished. Why should it be finished? How do I know it's finished? Because it doesn't arise? You know? Give me a break. So, you know, to heal yourself, you have to be a psychologist. Meaning you have to know your own psychology. And a bigger perspective, you know? And honestly, again, to handle others well, you have to know more than they do. You have to see them better than they see themselves. Not that we achieve that often. We may achieve it more and more. But don't assume you'll achieve it. But that is a goal. You know, keep a true goal. Not a watered-down goal. Keep a true goal. The goal is, you know, to be fully free in power, in clarity, in love, moment by moment. No emotional reactions, right? No situation would have emotional charge for the fully balanced entity. Now, that we never achieve consistently, but that should be our goal. And it doesn't mean repression. It couldn't be done by repression. It's only done by acceptance more and more and more. Yeah. This blockage and that blockage and this blockage and that blockage. But you see, you have to, and another thing I listened to in myself yesterday was a thought, you want happiness, right? Well, get it now. Right now. How? Well, you can't have it if your mind is blocked, period. Meaning when distortions are at a certain degree or intensity, there is no happiness possible. Okay, then focus on your misery. Then be with your misery. And don't expect it to be gone. Be with it. You know, it's like, it's the same way people treat children. You know? I mean, I watch this and I can see how, I mean, it's very curious to me how very pure, heaven-sent, very bright children at age, what, 5, 3, 5, 7, 8, become messed up, miserable adults. How does that happen? It's interesting. Normally, it happens by internalizing the way the parent treats the child. First of all, the parent neglects the child because the parent is stuck with their own stuff and feels somewhat of a burden, generally, or more or less, or now and then. But there's the way that the parent teaches picking and choosing in the mind. So the child's crying and the parent says, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. And that's a good response because some of the parents say, shut up, or they don't even listen. Or the child is walking 10 feet behind the parents crying. And the parents think, you know, let him cry it out. And the child is learning, you're not important, I don't love you. And no one cares if you're miserable. So then the child actually develops self-hatred or a bad feeling of self for that. If the child is loved, the child feels love for himself, herself. If the child is not loved, the child feels dislike for himself, herself. And that's how they lose heaven. That's how the clouds, the aura of heaven is lost. Yeah, you are not the contents of mind in the same way as you are not the flesh of body. Flesh of body is the substance of body. The contents of mind is the substance of human mind. That, I mean, just in terms of what fills it or what engages it. And that realization, or the more we know it, the better we can be with the arising distortions. But there must be certain, you know, there are certain deep beliefs that have to be shifted along the way. And one of them is, because I don't see it, it's gone. Because it's not arising, it's no longer here. That's not true, you know? We also have to consider that the reason we have distortions is because we hold them. There's an attachment to distortion that maintains the presence of the distortion. So we need to be responsible. I made and I keep my distortions. The way to be free of distortion is to discover and cut the root of desire to keep the distortion. This is subtle. You know, why is he an angry man? I mean, a real angry man is a rager. Why? Because he feels he needs it. It's protective, or it's self-reinforcing, or, you know, he wants to be like his daddy, who was like that too. And that feeling of being right is used in the service of low self-esteem to bolster a weak sense of self. You know, if you need anything from anybody emotionally, it's because you ain't doing it for yourself. If you need anything from anybody emotionally, okay? I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not talking about you're starving and you need food, but emotionally, mentally, socially, if we need anything, it's a form of weakness that's based on low self-valuing and inadequate self-understanding. You know thyself is the whole of the way. Know thyself is the path. So more the whole self, not the little self only, right? Not the conscious mind only, or the personal unconscious of distortions, but the greater being. The more that's known, the more we can discover how we cling to our painful distortions. So there are the distortions that cause a lot of pain. It's called ego dystonic. Psychological term, ego, D-Y-S, tonic. Then there's ego sin tonic, sin meaning with, dis meaning against or bad, sin meaning with or together, synthesis. It's easier to get rid of the distortions that are painful than the ones that that cause us, you know, that we cherish. But in general, all those distortions are fed by a confused need to hold them. And to cut, you see, you have to look a few levels down, right? Why is there, you know, why do these distortions arise? Well, because they're still in me. Why are they still in me? Because I haven't released them. Why haven't I released them? Because I haven't healed them. Why haven't I healed them? Or how haven't I healed them? Because I haven't addressed them with adequate love and understanding. Why? Because I don't want to. Why? Because I'm afraid. Why? Because I don't want to lose it. I don't want to look at it because I feel bad about myself. I feel worse about myself when I see my problems. And I don't want to really be without them because I think I need them. I don't know how to be without them. How would I be without that hard shell? How can I live? How can I ever stop grieving the loss of the loved one? It's a betrayal if I stop grieving, isn't it? How can I not be afraid? I'm really weak and they're really strong. And, you know, I really can't take care of myself. How can I? Why? It's not safe to be without fear. So we keep all those distortions by an unconscious need to not be without them, to be with them, to think of ourselves in the ways that we do by their maintenance. by keeping them, by having them still within. We can see it with anger, right? Anger is a strong. Oh, I'm strong. I'm angry. I'm strong. We can see it with resentment. They screwed me. Of course I hate them. Or, of course, you know, they deserve punishment or something. And sadness, you know? I am a mess. I am miserable. How can I be without this? How could I ever be without this? Or, how can I ever forget? How can I ever forgive? It's not right. It's wrong to forgive. It's wrong to forget. It's wrong to move beyond the sorrow of the loss. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, that type of justification for maintained distortion. You know, this is the work. This is the real work of 3D. This is the work. That's why, you know, honestly, that document, the Healing and Balance PDF, is probably one of the most important documents you'll ever find. And I don't mean that to say anything good about me, because it's not my teaching, it's my compilation. I'm just the little guy. But that teaching is so central, and we read it and we move on to something else, but we really don't know it deeply. That's a problem. You don't need many, many teachings. You need a few very centered teachings. Anyway, have a good evening, and see you next time. So, good night, have a good sleep, thanks again, and see you next time.